Investors Chronicle.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the IC Interviews. I'm Dave Baxter. I'm the funds editor on Investors Chronicle. There has been a bit of a hiatus with the IC Interviews episodes, given perhaps just how eventful times have been and lots of things going on at the IC. But hopefully we are back with a bang. We have a very interesting guest with us today, kind of looking at a sector which is perhaps more, looks more esoteric to some investors, but has proved very popular in recent years for good reason. So today with me, I have Richard Crawford. Richard is an investment manager on the Renewables Infrastructure Group. As I mentioned, perhaps less familiar to some than the likes of kind of shares and equity funds, but it's one of the kind of stalwarts of a sector that has proved enormously popular in recent years. Even last year, amidst a very kind of volatile market, such trusts managed to raise a lot of money and appeal because of their inflation linkage, because of the high levels of income they generate, and because in theory they should be less exposed to, I suppose, the kind of ups and downs of markets and economies. So Richard, thank you very much for joining us today. I think perhaps just very briefly for people who don't know TRIG, as it's called, it might be good just to very briefly kind of outline, you know, what you invest in and the mixture of kind of different assets that you guys tend to focus on.
Yeah, and hello, David, and hello, everybody. So I'm Richard Crawford. I work for fund manager Infrared, and Infrared is the investment manager of the investment company TRIG, which David was referring to. So TRIG, the Renewables Infrastructure Group. It's a FTSE 250 company. We launched the company 10 years ago. Then it had a market capitalization of about £300 million. Now it's up to in excess of £3 billion. And that growth has been achieved to a large extent by very supportive shareholders investing more money as we found good opportunities within the renewables infrastructure sector to invest in, as well as growth in the underlying value as well. And we invest in what we call renewables infrastructure. By that we mean wind farms, solar parks. More recently, we've been adding battery storage as well. So these are all infrastructure which is absolutely fundamental for what we call the energy transition, as we're decarbonizing the power production as part of the overall energy transition. And we invest in European countries as well as in the UK. We have about 60% of the portfolio in the UK and about 40% of the portfolio in Europe. And obviously for both of those areas, this decarbonisation agenda is very important.
Very interesting kind of, I suppose, secular growth investment theme. And very, it's been very topical, as I alluded to in the last year or so. You know, most assets have kind of struggled in 2022, and people financially have struggled because of huge kind of upward shifts in energy prices. But the Renewables Trust have kind of benefited from that to an extent. And I suppose to kind of turn to TRIG itself, you guys have tended to, at least on a headline basis, have a pretty big exposure to wholesale power prices relative to your peers. How is that kind of shaping up now? I mean, have you attempted to kind of like hedge things out more? And is that something you're kind of concerned about given, you know, in recent months, at least we've seen a slump in prices. So that could turn from a sort of a benefit into more of a disadvantage.
So I would, I'd say power prices are particularly high now. We know this, of course, from our own electricity bills. And this has been driven up by the shortage of gas coming into Europe, with LNG ships taking over from the cheaper piped Russian gas. But we also have to remember that This was not the situation as recently as the COVID lockdown, when where prices were much lower. And David, you reference a slump. I certainly wouldn't call it that. I would say prices have become a bit more tolerable for users. We seem to have been spared to colder winter. Touch wood, that continues, and our gas stocks have lasted. But we're still at, prices round about £100 megawatt hour, which is still historically high. And the underlying pressures on the system, I think, remain. So we're seeing, we look at forward prices for the next few winters, we're seeing prices in the region of double that. So it's a difficult one at the moment to predict the level of prices, because there is an awful lot of volatility in it. So what we do within Trey is we very firm believers in maintaining a mix of our revenue types, and we have both fixed revenues as well as variable revenues. And a great advantage of fixed revenues, and these are to a large extent the government support mechanisms, the CFDs, the feed-in tariffs, the ROC subsidies that you will hear of in this sector. They are actually the majority of our income. So some 60 to 65% of our income we expect over the next 10 years comes from that area. And this gives us strong visibility of revenues. These can be go out for as much as 15 years, and also the inflation protection, because these generally speaking are indexed. And then we'll also sell power into the wholesale market. Now, sometimes we will pre-sell forward maybe a season, maybe a year or so, but relatively short periods versus the government support mechanisms, as I say, 15 years plus. And that's about 35 to 40% of our revenues. And what you'll hear me talk about quite a lot, I suspect, in this podcast is the importance of diversification within an investment portfolio. And this is one aspect of our diversification, having a mix of revenues.
Yes. Yeah. Diversification, always a good mantra in investments. And interesting to see how you can achieve it in this space as well. But sticking for now with some of the kind of more topical developments in this space. Obviously, a big thing that sort of come through has been the windfall tax. How would that kind of affect the portfolio? Maybe you say it's kind of more of a moderate thing, but with prices falling, perhaps in a strange way, that is, windfall tax is a positive thing if you stand out to lose less because you will earn less and pay less tax and excess profits. What would the impact be for you?
Yeah, so we're not obviously hugely happy with the way the windfall tax has come in. And we do feel that it has been hitting the sector rather too harshly and creating some imbalance in the risk profile, but fully supportive of the fact that the government has to, at a time like this, support prices and has to get the revenue to achieve that, as prices have been during 2022 extremely high. And if we look on the brighter side from the investors' point of view in this sector of the windfall tax, of course, now our forecasts on which our NAVs are produced are much less sensitive to the level of power prices that we assume due to the nature of the way the windfall tax works, taking the lion's share of the revenues above a certain level. And TRIG and others in the sector have announced NAVs following the announcement of the windfall tax in the UK, and there's been some similar moves in Europe as well. So those NAVs should fully reflect the tax, and also, as I say, have now less exposure to variations in power prices going forward.
So there is some kind of visibility on the impact. Turning to kind of, I suppose, another development. What do you think about the sort of the government plans to de-link electricity prices from gas prices? I suppose the kind of the link has actually been a boost for renewables, but I can imagine there are also plenty of advocates for that kind of delinking approach.
Yes, and I would put ourselves amongst them. The current situation where power is priced by the marginal generator's cost breaks down when we have a lot of renewables on the system. And it looks wrong when the price of the renewable energy is being set with reference to gas and carbon, which is the consequence of the current mechanism, as these are not input costs for renewables. And we can all see this. So a transition to a better long-term solution seems very, very sensible to us. Now, we have this mechanism, which is called the CFDs, a contract for difference, which we're in the renewables context. We're referencing a UK government support mechanism. It's used a lot for offshore wind, and it provides both the generator and the consumer with price certainty. And it's at a level that's judged to be affordable by the government and to provide an appropriate return to the investors who bid for the CFD prior to building the wind farm. So it's worked very well. It's brought in a lot of new investors. And currently, because the CFD strike prices are well beneath current power prices, the offshore wind farms are paying the government, reducing the cost to be borne by the consumer, which is exactly what we want when prices are high. And when wholesale prices are low, the reverse happens. So it works for the investor as well. So this suggestion, which has been worked up by the government, is that perhaps we will bring in this CFD mechanism for existing wind farms, which are selling the power into the market. So these are often the older ROC projects. And this, to our mind, makes a lot of sense, provides certainty both for the investor and also for the consumer, and will avoid this position where prices can peak hugely and be unaffordable for the consumer. And effectively, the government has had to step in to help there. But likewise, when there are periods where prices are very low, we go back to a lockdown in COVID as an example of this, the investor gets some protection as well. So it works from both sides. So we'd be supporters of that. And interestingly, there are similar things being considered in Europe, where again, you've got renewables being more and more a higher percentage of the generation mix.
I suppose that's maybe that brings us on to kind of you talking earlier about the kind of mix of exposures, and that does include different geographies. You know, you still have quite a big UK focus, but have I suppose expanded out into Europe. How much I suppose you're kind of working across a massive different sort of regulatory approaches. I mean, at the minute, are there any kind of geographies that are particularly kind of standing out? Any areas where you could see yourself moving into more compared with your current sort of allocations?
So we look for and wish to maintain the good diversification we have within the portfolio. So just a little bit about that to start with. We've got, we're in the three different technologies, wind, solar, and now increasingly in the battery storage. We have a wide geography. We have about 40% of the portfolio in the UK, 60% in the UK and about 40% in Europe, and the bigger countries in Europe that we're in are France, Germany, Sweden, and Spain. And we also careful not to allow any individual asset to dominate the portfolio. So our largest asset typically would be 10% of the portfolio or less. And all of this investment is in established technologies that we consider will operate reliable and in good quality country counterparts. So the advantages of all this diversification is really about managing the weather, managing power price risks, managing regulatory risks, because investments in the energy sector are always exposed to changes in the regulations. And obviously, by being across different technologies and jurisdictions helps this. And you manage your project-specific risks by having this spread of assets. I think if we look at the investments we made in 2022, it's very illustrative of our focus and the areas that we like. So we invested in Hornsea One, which is a very large offshore wind farm off Hull. We also invested in Mercure, which is in the German North Sea. Both of those give us good visibility on subsidized revenues. We completed construction of an onshore wind farm in France, and another in Sweden. The French one subsidized, Swedish one unsubsidized. And we also built out a large solar project in Spain near Cadiz, and that is also a merchant project. So you can see with those additions the way that we're adding and maintaining that diversification within the portfolio. And I would say the Nordic market is good. The German market for the offshore wind and the Iberian market for the solar are all strong markets for us. Mm. We've also still do very much like the UK, but the UK has had some challenges, it's fair to say, in the last 12 months. In particular, obviously, there was the gilt blowout in September, but that's now come back somewhat into control. We're seeing about a 0.5% to 1% differences between the interest rates of a 10-year gilt in the UK and France and Germany respectively. So it's a sort of back perhaps a little bit closer to normal differentials, and we seem to have more stability. Long may that continue in the UK. And so I suppose in terms of the portfolio, we continue with those geographies. I mentioned battery storage. We are looking to bring more what we call flexible capacity into the portfolio. Mm. And so we're developing some of these assets in the UK. And this is very much complementary to the generation that you get from renewables. So it adds stability to the grid and it helps renewables, which of course are intermittent generation, better match to the demand for electricity. So that we see very complementary and additive to the kind of risk profile we're trying to create and diversification we're trying to create within our portfolio.
Yeah, it's interesting that point, because there is, you know, grid capacity seems to be such a topical issue, and there seems to be kind of more and more demand for those kind of assets. I suppose something interesting to highlight is you mentioned risk profile, and you try to sort of manage things via diversification, but to what extent now? I mean, there's been a huge amount of money going into renewables in recent years, and you know, perhaps you could argue that you need to take more risk in some areas to get kind of achieve more interesting yields and that kind of thing. And the trust has upped its limit, for example, on how much it can put into assets under construction. You're focusing on some of those newer technologies. Does the trust need to effectively sort of take on more risk now in order to generate the same returns, or is that a balance that is kind of possible to strike?
Yeah, so it's certainly not our intention to be taking on more risk other than when we see the returns very, very much rewarding that risk. And I think what we've got is, you know, from when we started, renewables were still fairly new in the eyes of investors, still very much getting to terms with them. For example, at that time, we didn't invest in offshore wind because we considered that to be a relatively newer application of the wind farms and some more risks involved in that. We then, about halfway through the life of the trust so far, about 5 years ago, we expanded the investment remit to include offshore wind, and that's because there was much more history, much more experience, much greater resources and knowledge available for the building and the operating and maintenance of these offshore wind farms. So I didn't really see that as an increase in the risk exposure. I saw it as now we have better understanding of that area, and therefore we can include it within the risk profile which our investors are expecting from TRIG. And I think the same applies to battery storage. We did our first battery storage asset investment some years ago. We've been seeing how that's going. We then, as we saw the relevance of the sector, its importance and the opportunity from the sector, we've now looked to expand that more. And indeed, we expanded our investment policy to give us more scope to do things outside of wind and solar for that reason. So I don't really see it as being increasing the risk profile. The other thing to remember on the construction projects is that the managers to this, so I've mentioned InfraRed. InfraRed is the investment manager. We also have a specialist operations manager, RES Renewable Energy Systems. And both of us have a lot of experience of investing in construction projects and doing development projects, and in particular, RES have built a lot of this themselves. So we've got a lot of experience to draw on as well, which helps manage those risks, of course.
I mentioned the kind of flood of money into the space. I suppose there's now, it seems there's more money looking for kind of projects. You know, how does that affect your kind of your due diligence? I mean, are you having to contend with kind of valuations being higher than what they used to be when perhaps renewable infrastructure was a little bit less established?
I think that has been a feature. And as investors have got more comfortable with renewables and they've seen the scale of it and the importance of it and the support that it gets from governments, people have been coming more into the sector, and returns have dropped over that 10-year period. And indeed, it's partly the reason for the increase in values that we've seen in the sector. But the due diligence remains very, very similar. It's a lot of due diligence takes place, technical due diligence, even when they're assets that we're very familiar with. There's still a lot of project specific due diligence that we do before we'll invest, and of course the legal due diligence as well, and estimating energy yield, a lot of experience there, but nevertheless it's an area of a lot of due diligence. Just how much energy yield will we get out of any given site, and also the power prices to assume where we're not getting the subsidy, but we're selling the power into the market. So that work hasn't reduced, but it's always been there. I think although there are more investors in the sector, there are also a lot more investment opportunities, and I think we're going to see that continue, because one of the effects of the situation between Russia and Ukraine and moving away from Russian gas is, of course, a further acceleration in renewables. I mean, it was needed anyway because of the decarbonisation journey that we're on, and renewables, of course, is such a central pillar of that. But now, of course, not only from the point of view of decarbonisation, but from the point of view of cost effectiveness and security of supply. So when you've got very, very strong fundamental need for the sector, then I think that helps give investors comfort that even though you're always exposed in the electricity sector to regulatory risk, that the need for the sector is such that the changes to the regulations should be fair to the investors, which are needed, as I say, really in increasing numbers.
And it's interesting you mentioned earlier, you're talking about battery kind of storage, and you were talking generally about, I suppose, subsectors and technologies and so on, almost maturing to an extent that you're more kind of comfortable investing. Are there any kind of areas, whether it's technologies, for example, that you are kind of currently keeping an eye on? I mean, as this investment trust sector expands, we're seeing more and more kind of very specialized offerings, and I suppose you're just seeing more ways to kind of play that renewables theme.
So the fundamentals for us, the technology, we want it to be tried and tested. So we're not looking to be pioneers in trying out new technologies. I'm trying to think of an example. Floating offshore wind would be an example. We'd want to see that working and demonstrated before we invested in it. I think it's an example of that. So that is sort of fundamental to us. And then we need visibility of the revenue and the cost base, but in particular the revenue with some of these newer technologies. These are the challenges. If we take something like hydrogen, we hear a lot of. Hydrogen is necessary if you're going to get to net zero, because there are certain industrial processes which are very difficult to decarbonize without it. But it's expensive, and at the moment there's no, in our view, clear visibility on the revenues, the stability of the revenues that we would need for a low-risk secondary investor such as Trigg to get involved. So I see whilst These are things that we are aware of. And of course, they're of interest to us. They are probably going to become part of the decarbonisation solution. Trigger's not going to be a pioneer in going into things before they've been established and we've got really comfortable technology and in particular, as I say, where that revenue line is going to come from, what is the offtake for these technologies. I mean, I think there are huge investment is needed. It's not just in renewables. I mean, the whole area of the grid stability and bringing in these other technologies are going to be really important as we go through the sort of the second half of the decarbonisation. If you think about it, we've done sort of 20 or so years so far, and we're trying to get to zero by 2050. Well, the second half is certainly going to be the more difficult one. So at the moment, I think we're very well placed just with our wind farms, solar parks, and the battery storage. I think other areas of energy storage are certainly of interest. We like flexible generation. Hydroelectric plants might be an example of that. But some of the other things which are more difficult to see, are not as proven on the technology or the revenues, are something that would be some time before we'd look at.
Interesting. Turning to a slightly different issue, an interesting detail I noticed from one of your sets of kind of interim reports was talking about this idea that Trigg might kind of have to, or already is, I suppose, kind of taking more minority stakes in projects, which I assume is just kind of a result of, you know, developments in the market, perhaps, and that flood of money we discussed. But is that still a kind of development that's ongoing? And, you know, what implications does that have in terms of your investments?
I think sometimes we will take minority stakes in projects. It's really a function of the size of some of the projects. So you've got the offshore wind farms now are very large. The Hornsea One investment we made in excess of a gigawatt. And we always want to make our investments fit the portfolio, and you don't want to become overweight in any one investment. So I expect we're going to see a range of shareholdings. There'll be some minorities. There'll be many at 100% as well. What's important for us is that we are an active asset manager. So the governance rights, seat on the board, the ability to shape decisions and develop the business plans. Now, often we're working with very experienced people on these larger projects, and that's a great meeting of minds and thinking about what is the best way that we can maximize the regeneration from our assets and the life from our assets. So we are very comfortable taking 100%, but equally we're comfortable with partnering with experienced and good partners, and I see both happening going forward.
And how is to use I suppose competitive jargon, but how is the kind of investment pipeline looking at the minute? I mean, is there much of interest available in the market? I suppose, as we discussed, maybe the valuation kind of there's a valuation challenge, and perhaps more so on the back of what we've seen with energy prices in the last year or so.
First thing is lots of opportunities in the sector, and developers and early funders look for construction capital or to recycle their own investments. And in fact, I expect we will see an acceleration in renewables development. As I was saying, governments see renewables so strongly as the solution to getting away from fossil fuels. And I see that only accelerating. So a lot of opportunity within the sector, and that's borne out in the pipeline at any one time. And I think the fundamentals remain keen interest from investors for exposure to renewables and matched with the investment opportunity.
Yeah. And would we, I mean, perhaps we'll see kind of, so far this year, we've seen perhaps a tentative return to investment trusts kind of raising money. And some infrastructure names have at least sort of announced plans to do things like share placings? I mean, are there enough kind of opportunities on the line that perhaps Trig investors might expect that again, expect an opportunity to kind of get in slightly cheaper than the current valuation?
I can't comment on that, but I would observe that we have recently increased our revolving credit facility. So we've taken out a new facility of £750 million. That's up from £600 million, 3-year commitment. So we have plenty of headroom, and of course we use that for acquisitions, provide a funding source for our construction activities, along with the reinvestment of our internally generated cash flows. So this increase really reflects, you know, basically the increased construction activity we have as the company grows.
Yeah. And otherwise, I mean, you mentioned the kind of spike in gilt yields last year was a challenge for the sector. But are there any kind of major challenges that you are kind of on the lookout for this year, or just possible headwinds that you have on your mind?
I think the current environment is difficult, difficult for all investors across all asset classes. Obviously, Ukraine, we've got a lot of inflation, increasing interest rates, weak economic outlook. So I think even in that circumstance, the retention of capital value is a challenge. I don't think renewables is immune from these macroeconomic challenges, but I do think we're well placed. So we are defensive against inflation. Our exposure to power prices is a significant plus in this market. And we've had a historically low beta, something you observed earlier compared to the wider equities market. So I think from a macroeconomic perspective, we're well placed. I think if we look to the sector itself, the challenge, but also the opportunity for the sector is probably agreeing the long-term pricing mechanisms for electricity, which you asked about earlier. And we have to come to a solution that provide customers and investors with greater price certainty. So I think that actually ends up being a positive, but we have to go through the agreement of that. But most importantly, I think the fundamental is the sector is highly relevant and in fact essential for the energy transition, as we've been discussing. You know, decarbonisation always, but now more than ever, it's cost effective and it's providing energy security.
Okay, well, lots to think about there. Very, very interesting points, but I'm afraid that is all we have time for. So I'd just like to thank Richard for joining us today. And thank you for listening. Stay tuned for more IC interviews and take care.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.